This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. COVID-19 cases are on the rise around the country, the region, and our state. It took Vermont 139 days to go from 1,000 total cases to 2,000 cases of the virus earlier in the pandemic, but only 26 days to go from 2,000 to 3,000, and 10 days to hit 4,000 cases. Well, we hit 5,000 cases in just 10 days more. And we're not done yet. The state modeling team is now projecting a 50% increase in cases over the next 3 weeks, with the caveat that there's a lot of uncertainty still about what Thanksgiving gatherings may have looked like and what impact they could have on rising cases in Vermont. So what can be done by individuals, communities, and state officials to keep us safe and to try to reduce the spread as much as possible, even as vaccination is on the horizon? We're going to have our weekly health update today. We'll start with Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan, and then we'll pay special attention to the toll the pandemic is taking on Vermonters' mental health. We'll be joined for the second and third parts of the show by Mental Health Commissioner Sarah Squirrel. Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan, welcome back to the show. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So there's lots to talk about, and maybe while we have just you, we can go over some of the numbers that are coming out from the state, some of the updates to things like contact tracing, and a little bit more about vaccine information and what's coming out of the state. And then we'll still talk about that and take questions from Vermonters, but we'll also talk a little bit more about mental health and access to telehealth and other services that Vermonters may be needing more than usual right now. So latest numbers today, we heard there are 100 new cases in Vermont that are being reported today. So those are positive cases that came back yesterday being reported today. It's been a little up and down with the numbers, you know, 60 here, 100 there, a very high number last week when we saw 224, which included some numbers that hadn't been reported by UVM Medical Center back in November because of their cyber attack. But it's hard to get a handle if you're just looking day to day on what the case rise looks like. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it is a little bit of a roller coaster. I know that we our emotions ride up and down at the health department as we see the numbers come in. And we get excited when we see the numbers under 100 for a couple of days and then they go up. But in general, I would say that we appear to be in a place that is a little better than was worst case scenario for this time. And we're pleased by that. We're hopeful that the governor's executive order and what a lot of Vermonters did over the holidays, you know, really keeping to their own households, is hopefully impacting that. I mean, we're not sure right now. It doesn't look like right now we're seeing a significant surge, and that's possible in terms of the multi-household gathering type of impact. And it's possible it's because Vermonters, you know, did a lot of the right things, although it's still a little early. We may see that, you know, in the coming week. Where we are seeing cases, sadly, a lot of cases is in the long-term care facilities. And of course, those have brutal effects there. And I can tell you that our outbreak prevention teams that work with the healthcare facilities and the long-term care facilities are working hard. And every death is a devastating one when you're on that team and you feel like your job is to try to prevent that.
Yeah.
So it's been so hard to see those deaths rise. So as much as I'm pleased that, you know, we're making progress, it's just this huge reminder that it's really our behavior that can help prevent what's happening in those long-term care facilities. The ripple effect here is huge.
Yeah, devastating for so many people. I mean, devastating in the abstract for many of us thinking about the family members who are grieving, also devastating for people who work in these long-term care facilities. And these patients are people they care for. It's their jobs to care for them, but, you know, also in many cases, forming relationships and love and really just all feeling terrible, I'm sure. So much grief, plenty of grief to go around at this point.
You know, and I really want to highlight there are people out there who say, well, would these deaths have happened anyway in these long-term care facilities? And you know, just to be clear, we would not be seeing this level and this rapidity of death in these facilities if it weren't for COVID-19, in case anyone is confused by that at all. These are real effects of this pandemic, and it really does have a connection back to what we do outside of those facilities every day.
So, Deputy Commissioner Dolan, when we talk about the fact that it's looking to the health department like Vermonters may have been pretty good about avoiding social gatherings and family gatherings over the Thanksgiving holiday, and that the spread isn't as bad so far from the preliminary numbers we're seeing that could be related to Thanksgiving, not as bad as it could have been. Nonetheless, the state modeling team is projecting a 50% increase in cases over the next 3 weeks, and that feels a little disheartening to think that maybe Vermonters did do the right thing to try to prevent the spread, and we're still likely to see that high an increase.
Well, we certainly know that not all Vermonters followed the one household rule. Even those who didn't have to, didn't have a necessity to link up with another household because of isolation or safety reasons. So we know there are some people who didn't. Again, it's early in our curve there. The other thing that's happening, of course, is that we've got states all around us that are rapidly rising, and some of which, Rhode Island, in a real crisis. And so that is inevitably going to affect us. It doesn't take many people to travel in and out to start seeing those impacts. I mean, we know that all it takes is one or two cases really in the right environment to start an outbreak. So we've got the things happening around us. We do have what I believe is a minority of Vermonters probably who we're not following the executive order. And then, of course, we've just got some community spread that's happening, even with the best of intentions. So that mix. And again, it is early to say we were successful, but it does appear that people doing the right thing, maybe modifying our surge a little bit so that the surge is still happening and it's still coming, but maybe our numbers are a little less because people did the right thing. And that's something that people should be feeling good about. And hopefully it's motivation for people to keep doing this, especially as we see what's happening in long-term care facilities. Let's do everything we can to bring that down.
This was announced last week, but just to update people who may not have heard it in the press briefing, I think it was Friday that it happened in the press briefing. There is no start date for school-based winter sports at this point. They had already been postponed, and right now they are postponed indefinitely, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I know that's really hard for parents to hear and obviously for kids to hear. Nobody wants to do this. We know that sports and socializing is so important for kids. But what we're seeing is that the sports do appear to be another avenue for transmission, not necessarily the sporting activity itself, although in some cases, yes, but it's also the socializing before and after. It just appears to be part of that culture of sports. And so we're just doing everything we can, all the tools in the toolbox, to try to get the transmission under some kind of control so that in the future, of course, we can relax in the future.
Let's talk a little bit about contact tracing. There is a text notification system that the health department is ramping up. As I understand it from Human Services Secretary Mike Smith, it's expected to actually go into place this week. Vermonters should expect to see on their phones the number 86911. That's the number that will be used to text notification to close contacts of someone who has tested positive for COVID-19. And it was stated in the press briefing today that that text would show up on your phone between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. You would get, I think, two short texts telling you that you may have been exposed to COVID-19 and offering instructions on how to quarantine and get tested, et cetera. But that number, 86911, is the one that should show up on your phone from the health department. But Deputy Commissioner Dolan, that does not replace an in-person phone call with a contact tracer. This is just designed to be a first step to try to get the word out initially. Why is that necessary?
It allows us to get the word out really quickly. So we're able to hit texts and hit a lot of contacts at once. We have also found in contact tracing that when we call people, they are less apt to pick up. But if we text them first or say, hey, I just called, are you available for a call? They're much more likely to say, oh, yes, I'll pick up. So there's a couple of reasons. One, when you text first, they're more likely to pick up when you call. And two, it gets the word out immediately. Cases have been great in addition about contacting their close contacts and letting them know. So that's been very helpful. So thank you to all the Vermonters who are positive out there who are letting their contacts know. And this is another way to do it. It also sends them a link to the resources. So when we're talking to them on the phone, that's not as easy to do verbally. And so that's another great advantage. They can quickly click on and learn a little bit more about how to quarantine. So yes, you'll get a text and it will indicate, it will say something like, you may be a close contact. We'll be in touch. You should quarantine now. And here are some resources. And then the contact tracer will be in touch soon after.
So I was a little not alarmed, but it was like, oh, gosh, when it was stated that the way the health department is getting these numbers is through the person who tests positive, that person would say, you know, here's who I've been in close contact with and here are their phone numbers, which makes sense. So, you know, it's sort of like, well, duh, that's kind of how it's always been happening. And in fact, it was clarified that that is how contact tracers are getting the numbers, at least at first, from people who may have been close contacts of a confirmed case. But then it also made me think, boy, do I even know the phone numbers of everybody who I may have been in close contact with? Probably, because I'm not in very close contact with many people, but I'm not sure that would be the case for everybody. So how do you get numbers for people if the person who tests positive doesn't have their contact info?
We have a couple of very resourceful people on a team who look into a variety of records to try to get those phone numbers. You know, they use a variety of methods to try to see. Sometimes, you know, you might call the case again and say, you know, can you think a little more? Is there, can you look it up? I mean, so sometimes going back to the case and they might say, oh, actually such and such has the number. And then we also just have a couple, a team that looks through other kinds of records that the health department may have access to in order to get phone numbers. So we do a variety things. What is helpful now is now that the governor has asked people to limit their contacts, we actually have people listing fewer contacts. So for a while there, we were having people list 8, 10, 12 contacts. But now that it's tightening up, you know, those contacts are fewer. So that's another advantage to keeping your circle tight. You're much more likely to actually list fewer and you know their phone numbers. They're often in the same household and we're able to reach them right away.
We're doing our Vermont Edition weekly health update with Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan this afternoon and taking questions from you if you have them. Our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We do anticipate that there will be an authorization, an emergency authorization of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine coming very soon, and that Vermont could start to see the initial doses of that vaccine coming through as early as next week, I believe. And it's going to be over 5,000. Is it 5,825? Is that the correct number, Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, I'll have to get it. It's 5,800 and something.
I think it's 25. I didn't know whether it was 508.
Oh, it's 5,850.
5,850. And it was clarified today that 5,850 is the initial dose. So 5,850 will get that first week's initial dose, and then they'll get another dose a couple of weeks later, about 3 weeks later. And as I understand it, in phase 1A, it's going to be divided between vulnerable Vermonters who live in long-term care facilities and frontline healthcare workers who will be getting the vaccine first. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we'll actually be ordering those doses on a weekly basis. So that's the first dose. And our anticipation is as manufacturing continues, we continue to order.
Let's go to Eileen, who's calling in from Colchester. Hi, Eileen. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you, first off, for all the great information. My question is logistical. As the vaccinations increase and we move through the various segments of need and population, how will we know it's, quote unquote, our turn? Like, as I haven't read anything on that. Like, as a healthy female in this age group, will I then be notified that it's sort of my time to seek out a vaccine?
Yeah, Eileen, thanks. You're not the only one wondering that. We also got a note from Susan in Jericho who says, well, how will people with serious health problems be notified about the vaccine? So, Deputy Commissioner Dolan, how are people going to find out when they're in line to get the vaccine?
It's a great question. We have a whole implementation team that's working on this every step of the way. Their focus right now is getting the vaccine out to the frontline healthcare workers and long-term care facilities. The vaccines will then go through, for most of us in the public, the vaccines will likely go through our primary care providers or your clinician. They'll also go through pharmacies. So we'll do a lot of mass communication. We have a mass communication plan that will allow people to know. Practices may also do their own communication out to their members, but there will be a lot of mass communication where the Vermont Department of Health is saying it's time to get your vaccine, and we'll be directing you to all the resources and places that you can get it.
You know, I know that this is still really early. We don't even have official confirmation from the federal government that the vaccine has gotten approval in this country. That hasn't happened yet, but people are getting anxious, as you might imagine. And so, you know, at the closer it gets, I think the more people want information. And so we have some specific questions that I don't know if you can answer, but they might be useful to illuminate the kinds of things that people are thinking about and concerned about, including Lisa in Grafton, who says, when the vaccine becomes available, what about those Vermonters who have a primary care doctor in New Hampshire, like Dartmouth Hitchcock and affiliates, and who generally receive their medical care in New Hampshire? What will the process be?
You will still be able to go to your regular provider and get it there as well. All the states are on about the same timeline. And so if you normally see a physician in New Hampshire, then you'll be able to get it at your physician's office there.
So it would essentially be based on where you get your medical treatment, not your state or county of residence?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, again, I'd probably have to take that question back. But right now, our expectation is to use all the usual methods we would use for vaccination. We will do some mass vaccination clinics, but that will likely be for these first priority populations. But we anticipate for the public, we will use the usual systems that people normally get other vaccines through. And so whoever you normally go to for your vaccine through your primary care, we would anticipate you would go there.
I was reading up on some of the early vaccination happening in the UK, where the Pfizer vaccine has been approved. And it looked like in many cases, people who live in long-term care facilities still have to go to a medical clinic to get their vaccine. Is that going to be the case in Vermont? Or are these doses, which need to be refrigerated at a very cold temperature, going to be transported to people who live in these facilities?
I will probably have to check on that. To the best of my knowledge, given the nature of the health status of people in these facilities, in our long-term care facilities, I anticipate that we will either have a location very close to the facility or we would administer in the facility itself. I think we'll need some more details of that plan. There will be some broader clinics, but right now I believe the plan is to bring the vaccine to the folks who need it. I don't anticipate that we'll be asking people in long-term care facilities, especially given the rate of COVID that we've got in those facilities, to be coming out. But I can get back to you if that answer changes.
Thank you. Stephen Shelburne says, I believe I am likely to be eligible for vaccination early on in the process because, one, I work in healthcare IT as an engineer for a major telehealth provider, and two, I have several chronic conditions that put me at high risk for severe sickness. However, my employer is in Boston and I work from home, so I'm not sure how I can even go about accessing the vaccine. Could you talk a little bit first, Deputy Commissioner, about, you know, Steve mentions that they work in healthcare IT. Is there a differentiation in which healthcare workers will get the vaccine in these very early stages? Healthcare workers are prioritized, but if Steve is not interacting face to face with patients, is Steve likely to be one of those early people?
No, he's not. It's for frontline healthcare workers who are interacting with the public and or patients. And so that will be the first line.
And then, you know, too, Steve says, I have several chronic conditions that put me at high risk. That may be a different factor. And so it's, you know, there are probably a lot of people who have a couple of different factors. And I think it's going to be more helpful as well when we get the more detailed plan, which Tracy should be posted on the health department website at some point soon. I couldn't see it this morning when I was looking about, you know, the sort of not exact, but more updated protocol of who's in line when.
Yeah, you know, we may have a protocol of who's in line when. It may not be detailed enough for someone to say, okay, I've got these chronic conditions and which week will I get it and exactly how will I get it? But yeah, that plan should be up. We are regularly updating our plans, so probably look for it next week. Our first push is to really do this first group. And people with chronic conditions, again, probably likely it will go through your healthcare provider, but healthcare providers, just like with other vaccines, are sometimes directed to prioritize their vaccine because they will get it in smaller shipments as well. They won't get all of it all at once, probably. And so they will also prioritize based on the direction from the Department of Health and the CDC.
Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan is with us all hour, as she is most Tuesdays. And we're also joined for the rest of the show by Mental Health Commissioner Sarah Squirrel. The state has been seeing the toll of the virus, social isolation, and economic difficulties on Vermonters' mental well-being and has been trying to highlight ways people can get help. But access to mental health services is always a challenge in this state. In some ways, the increase in telehealth has been really great for people needing support, but others are still struggling to connect with the services they need. And for many, it's not just a clinician that they need, but all kinds of social supports that are just not functioning in the same way right now. So Commissioner Squirrel is with us to answer any questions you might have about mental health and services the state provides. Commissioner Squirrel, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
What leads you to believe that Vermonters may be seeing more mental health distress or more mental health concerns this year than in previous years? Is it just a worry that you have, or is there data that the state is seeing that is alarming?
Yeah, thanks, Jane. We are certainly seeing increases in demand for mental health care, and that makes sense. We have gone from an acute crisis to chronic fatigue. COVID has created significant disruption to our daily lives. Our routines have changed. We're juggling childcare and working. Some of us are experiencing job loss and financial strain. And many Vermonters we know are experiencing an additional stress, anxiety, sadness, and depression. And we also know that many might be experiencing that for the first time. What I can say is that these are all normal feelings and reactions given the circumstances and stressors that we're facing, which I think is why now more than ever, just as much as we are protecting our physical health right now, we should all be vigilant in taking care of and monitoring our mental health. And I would urge Vermonters to make a wellness plan for their mental health and to reach out for support.
So when does it cross a line, though, between, I mean, you're saying it's all normal, this is something that so many of us are experiencing, and, you know, that can be a relief to some people to feel like, okay, well, you know, this is happening for a lot of people. On the other hand, that can then feel to some people like, my problems aren't so bad, this is happening to everybody, I just need to power through it, or I should get over it. So how do you know when it's time to seek help beyond saying, I just need to sleep more or exercise more, to saying, I have a real issue that I need somebody else to help me address?
Yeah, well, first, I would say anyone who is experiencing increased stress or strain as a result of COVID should reach out for support and help. And for individuals, if you're noticing that your depression, stress, anxiety is really increasing your day-to-day functioning, then you absolutely should reach out for help. And the other thing to keep in mind is that depression, particularly, is very common and it's very treatable. But we want individuals to feel comfortable reaching out for help. And one support I want to highlight, Jane, is COVID Support Vermont. This is something that the Department of Mental Health and Vermont Care Partners have established to help Vermonters cope with the pandemic. It's free and it's confidential, and you can access it simply by calling Vermont 211. There are counselors who are ready to take your call. They provide emotional support, a listening ear, and connections to community resources. Because as you noted, different individuals might need different levels of supports right now, but you should reach out regardless, and we can connect you to the right resources to ensure that you get the help that you need.
It was mentioned last week in one of the press conferences that the Department of Mental Health has added more people who can respond to calls, who are doing telehealth, but you know, finding a clinician, depending on what kind of person or what kind of support you're looking for, was already a challenge before the pandemic. So, you know, if there are more people trying to access services, how are you accommodating the needs of more Vermonters who may need them?
Yeah, so that is why we've established COVID Support Vermont. We have dedicated counselors who are working out of the 211 offices that can help assess and triage mental health issues right in the moment, or they can refer you to additional resources, whether that's a private therapist or connecting to our 10 community mental health agencies across the state. So we do worry about capacity of the system of care, but one of the, I guess, opportunities that we have in this push into telemedicine is that services can be more readily available. And one thing we've learned is that Vermonters can prefer that. Over the past few months, over 40% of the individuals who have sought services in our community mental health agencies have requested telehealth. So I think that certainly it has expanded capacity. And if you are having challenges reaching a therapist or accessing support, call Vermont 211 and the COVID support counselors can help connect you to those resources.
Deputy Health Commissioner Dolan, we've heard around the country from frontline healthcare workers who are exhausted and really struggling and watching their patients die all the time. Vermont had sort of a reprieve from that for a long time. But right now we are seeing cases rise. We are seeing people who, as we talked about earlier, work in long-term care facilities in skilled nursing who are seeing their patients die. We're seeing healthcare workers who may be more stressed. How are you trying to, how are you in the health department trying to check in with healthcare workers who are at risk of also suffering from some serious mental health issues, especially because of their jobs right now and the inability to take a break?
Yeah, it's really tough right now. About a week ago, we were on the phone one evening with one of the long-term care facility staff. At that point, I think there was just a handful of staff in the office because they had had cases both with staff and residents. So a bunch of staff had to go home and quarantine. We were scrambling to get some staff that we called over from the hospital to show up and help them out for the overnight. And they were exhausted. You could see it in their faces. We were on Zoom, you could hear it in their voices. Not just exhausted from overwork, but the mental exhaustion and the emotional exhaustion of seeing people, particularly in those facilities, passing away. We're seeing it to some extent in hospitals as well. So I'm part of the medical surge committee within our state emergency operations center. We have a variety of physicians who are advisors on that. And one of our top priorities is staffing. Unfortunately, staffing is a challenge across the country, and that is one of the biggest drivers of all this stress. If we had more staffing, as difficult as the subject matter is in terms of taking care of people with COVID, the bigger challenge is just the sheer amount of work and the sense that, if I don't show up, who's going to do the work? There's a lot of people in healthcare and in public health who feel like they don't want to step away and take a break, even though they need to, because who's going to do it if I don't, and so that's where we are. That's our biggest focus right now, is trying to actually locate staff and develop staff plans. We're talking to the National Guard. We've got Medical Reserve Corps volunteers. And then just looking within Vermont, what are all the ways we can provide relief from one facility to another? I do have to say Vermonters in this field have been incredible and stepping up to help their fellow healthcare workers, even when it's in a different facility. But it is challenging.
Let's go to some callers now as we continue this conversation. And Mental Health Commissioner Sarah Squirrel is going to stay with us throughout the hour. So if you have mental health questions or access to resources, anything like that you'd like to ask us, you can send an email to vermontedition@vpr.org or call 800-639-2211. Xenia is calling in from Barrie. Hi, Xenia. Nice to hear from you again.
Hi. Same message. When resources and stuff are being given out, it's still a great deal of see this website, and text and all these digital things that not everybody has digital stuff,
mm-hmm.
as was discovered when putting the school kids online, that a lot of them didn't have online capabilities. With me, it's brain damage, old age, and poverty. But it would really be very good if, when this website and that website and so on were being given out, that throw out a few bones here and there for people who are not on the digital. That would be great.
Yeah, Xenia, I hear what you're saying. Sarah Squirrel, you know, you mentioned the COVID support. Is it COVID Support VT? Is that the website name?
Yes, COVID Support VT.
If for people like Xenia or others who may not have reliable internet, is 211 the best number to call from a landline or whatever kind of phone you have if you're trying to access resources and you're not going to be doing it online?
Yeah, it's a great point that Xenia brings up. And yes, 211 right from your landline will get you connected directly to those counselors who can then triage back to our community mental health agencies. We do still have an incredibly dedicated workforce of direct care mental health workers across the state that can do community outreach if needed. This year, we were actually able to expand our elder care clinician program across the state. So 211 is a great starting point. And then if you need someone who can stop by or can do more direct care work with you, that is available. I would also just add with the earlier question about the stress and strain on frontline workers, the Vermont Department of Health also established Vermont HelpLink. That's vermonthelplink.org, and they actually have special resources for healthcare personnel. So I also wanted to add that.
So, you know, are there other ways that you're reaching out to people, maybe by actual physical mail or other ways that people, especially, you know, older people may be used to getting information that could be one way that the Department of Mental Health is thinking about trying to reach out to people?
Yeah, Vermont, COVID Support Vermont has a really extensive outreach and communication campaign. Some of that is mailings and the news, on the radio. So we're really trying to use all community resources that are accessible to us to really spread the word. We're also, I know that the COVID support workers have been at food banks in person. So again, if other folks have ideas about how we can enhance that outreach across the state, we'd certainly love to hear it.
Well, let's talk now with Jeff Berkovitz, who's the CEO of the Spark Center. It's an executive coaching organization based in Lincoln. Hi, Jeff. What would you like to add to this conversation?
Thanks, Jane. I appreciate you focusing on mental health as well as physical health. And, you know, I've had the honor of coaching more than 5,000 Vermonters, including frontline healthcare workers, government workers, nonprofit leaders, other change makers around the world, about 50,000 in total. And a lot of people just look to avoid burnout, and we've been talking about how to move beyond that to actually craft lives of joy, meaning, and impact. And I'll just mention a few of the 12 practices we suggest to people during the COVID moment, and these have proven pretty effective at helping people to not only just get through but move toward greater thriving. And this might also address Xenia's point when she asked for a few bones for those who may not have reliable internet. I'll take about maybe a minute or so. The first,
yeah, make it 1 minute rather than two because we're short on time.
Intentional about doing what we call a first thing activity each morning. It's an activity that gives you joy, if not a sense of meaning, before you interact with anyone else, before you check your email, before you take in any news, especially COVID or political news. Remember, number two, that a crucial strategy to deal with anxiety is gratitude. So when someone asks you an open-ended question like, how are you? To like reroute your neural pathways before you start talking about what's upsetting to you. Talk first about one or more of the most recent moments of joy and meaning you've had in that day. A third is to remember sparking it forward each day helps keep the blues away. So no matter how tight your time feels, it's important to make time to get outside your own head by doing at least one thing a day that benefits someone outside your family. Remember that you want to try what we call sandwich scheduling. When you plan your day, you don't just put your head down and then try to push on through all kinds of difficulties, but you want to do something that is going to lift your energy and your sense of possibility at least every 2 hours, if not every hour. So you've got to leave spaces in between tasks. It might seem inefficient, but it's proven more efficient as we've studied it. And finally, I would say you want to record your moments of joy and meaning every day, so you're celebrating the best and letting go of the rest, and it can serve as a blurbuster, so you don't feel at the end of the week like, I don't even know what happened, I was on the hamster wheel the whole time. For people who want more information, they can go to thesparkcenter.org. We're making a lot of support available to Vermonters, regardless of their ability to pay. We're happy to help in any ways we can, And I just want to say, Jane, I listen to you every day, wherever I am in the world, through the internet. And I really appreciate, deeply grateful for the thoughtfulness of the conversations you facilitate.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. And thanks for sharing your thoughts and expertise on that. Good ways for people to think about how to try to keep their spirits up and not just not burn out, but be more joyful. But Commissioner Squirrel, I mean, that may be one area where if people are trying those things and it's not working, that may be a sign that you should reach out to support for somebody, to get support from somebody who is, you know, a trained clinician who can help you deal with depression. If you're trying to do these things that normally bring you joy or help you find gratitude and you can't do that, that may be a sign.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Jane, and really appreciate the caller's great tips and guidance. And certainly want to underscore, you know, that theme of resilience. That is certainly that, you know, Vermonters, as Vermonters, we pride ourselves on resilience. But it's also okay to reach out for help. And that is my main message to Vermonters, is that you're not alone. It is okay to not feel okay right now. And there are many valid reasons to feel worried and overwhelmed, anxious, or exhausted. And as you noted, if that's starting to impact your functioning, you should reach out. The other thing I would just note is that I know that that's not always easy. Unfortunately, there is still stigma around mental health, and many who would benefit from mental health support and treatment simply don't access it or reach out because of fear of judgment or labeling. So I would urge everyone to not be afraid to talk about it, to don't be afraid to ask for help. And the best way that we can combat stigma is really to talk about our mental health with each other.
Let's go to Janine, who's calling in from Roxbury. Hi, Janine. Go right ahead.
Hi there. My name's Janine, and I'm a widow, and I live by myself now at the top of a hill. And I, you know, feel all those symptoms that you're talking about, you know, a little bit more intensely during this time of COVID. And one of the ways I've been able to find some comfort is to walk with my neighbors and friends, you know, socially distancing. And I'm just wondering what kind of science there is out there to back up these kind of restrictions on outside recreation.
Deputy Health Commissioner Dolan, could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There is no science that would suggest you shouldn't be recreating outside in general. We encourage people to get outside. It's a huge stress reliever. It's good for your health. What we are saying right now is if you are going to go outside and have walks or hikes, distance, and for now, do that with just one other person. And the reason we're saying that is because what we do find is that people, when they're doing those activities, inevitably get a little closer together. And we really want to limit the number of people getting together at this time when we're concerned about a surge. So please go outside, do your activity, do it with another individual. That's fine. But we're really asking you to limit that to one other individual at this time until we can get to a more stable place.
And we've talked about this before, Tracy, but it's this sort of hammer approach rather than the scalpel approach, because the health department is trying to make recommendations on a population level, not an individual level.
Yeah, and that's the only way we can do it. And so I know that it means that if you normally walk with five people, maybe you're just walking with one right now. And hopefully, you know, this is just temporary, and, you know, that may change in the coming couple of months, and we can hopefully change that up in the future. But right now, we are still in a place where our numbers are still relatively high. We've got very high rates all around us. So we want you to be healthy. We want you to be mentally healthy. Get outside. I was just outside this morning, but really limit the number of people you're doing with it. And I believe the executive order right now indicates one other person. And so if you can stick with that, that would be helpful for all of us. Thank you.
And let's go to Paul. Paul's calling in from Pulteney. Hey there, Paul. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I'll be brief. When the vaccine is available for the general public, you're stating that most people will be able to go to their primary care physician to get the vaccine. What about those of us that are lucky enough to be healthy and don't really have a primary care physician? What direction should we take?
Thanks, Paul. Deputy Commissioner Dolan?
Yeah, pharmacies are also authorized to provide vaccine, and so you will see a variety of ways to do it. Our goal is that any Vermonter who wants a vaccine, and we hope it's everyone, because this is really the way we will eventually arrest transmission. So our hope is that you get it any way you can, and we will make it accessible in as many ways we can. But pharmacies will be another option as well.
Is there a plan at some point as well, I would imagine, or I hope there is, to reach out to populations that are unsheltered and may not, you know, may not even have access to a pharmacy in any kind of regular way?
Yeah, so we'll be certainly holding some vaccination clinics for unique populations that wouldn't normally access either through a provider or through a pharmacy. We have a team working in detail on implementation plans for all of our most vulnerable populations, for the frontline workers, for workers who are essential for the basic functions that we go through in our day-to-day life. And so we've got teams working on it, but you will hear nice and loud and clear all the ways that you can get it. Rest assured, if you don't have a physician, that's not the only way you'll be able to get it.
We got a note from John in Rutland who says, in today's press conference, I believe Commissioner Levine referred to COVID-19 incidents that the department is monitoring. I think he said that included 64 workplace incidents. What's the difference between an incident and an outbreak? And before we have you answer, Deputy Commissioner, I'll just clarify the stats that I heard Health Commissioner Levine talk about during the press briefing. He said today the state is investigating 144 situations. And to put those in context, he said 27 of them are in the K-12 school setting, 6 are in childcare settings, and 43 are in healthcare facilities. 53, he said, are associated with work sites. So what is a situation or an incident versus an outbreak?
An outbreak is when we have epidemiological evidence that the virus is transmitted and moving beyond the original source. A situation is where we're working with a facility or another environment where we need to work with maybe an employer or a school or the hospital or a clinic to manage what's happening within their environment. And so it might even just be one case, but because it's in a facility like that, we have a team working to ensure that we prevent transmission.
Dennis is on the line with us from Cambridge. Hi, Dennis. Go right ahead. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I'm calling because it's my understanding the Women's Correctional Facility in South Burlington is currently in a COVID lockdown. And I was wondering, does the state have any kind of programs to assist people who are held in a dangerous situation where they basically have very little control over their environment?
And when you say to help people, do you mean to deal with the mental health issues that would come with, from isolation or other things, Dennis?
The mental health issues that come with being helpless to be held in an environment where COVID is obviously a threat.
Yeah.
And an immediate threat. And, you know, there's very little they can do themselves. What that must be affecting them mentally as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Commissioner Squirrel, we talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show with the Department of Corrections and how difficult it is for people who are incarcerated right now who have not had visitation since March, have not been able to see their children, hug their children, see friends or family, and who are, you know, as Dennis mentioned, often either placed in some kind of isolation to protect themselves, to protect people who are living there from COVID-19 if there's an outbreak in the facility, or upon intake are basically in isolation for the duration of an incubation period. And so there is an ability to get perhaps tablets to people sometimes, but boy, that isolation is a real problem for people. So what is the Department of Mental Health doing to help incarcerated Vermonters?
Yeah, Jane. So we work closely with corrections and certainly have offered, you know, any additional supports that we can in terms of, you know, what additional services and outreach might be necessary. Certainly if the Department of Corrections is looking for additional support from DMH in terms of that outreach virtual support, we are happy to provide that.
Another special population is children, and it's been, in some cases, pretty difficult for children with mental health difficulties to access special or specific mental health care. And, you know, when especially for acute mental health issues, that can be really problematic for young people. We're also hearing a lot about teenagers, high schoolers who are really struggling right now with suicidal ideations around the country, with isolation, with so many of the difficulties of COVID-19. What is the state doing differently right now to try to address the mental health needs of children and teenagers?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked, Jane. Children and youth are a top priority for our department. And we worked very quickly when COVID initially hit in March and April. We have a strong network of community mental health agencies that provide school-based mental health services and treatment. And we worked quickly to ensure that those services and treatment could continue to be provided in more of a hybrid remote environment, particularly for those who are already at risk. And it certainly makes sense right now that parents are worried. Raising children during a pandemic is no easy task. We're talking about remote learning, lack of classroom structure, and increased screen time, which is why I think our efforts to keep our public schools open have been so essential. And I would just add that, you know, for parents, routine and ritual is really important for children. It's also important to talk with them, to ask them about their concerns, and their answers can guide you on how to talk with them. And if you as a parent are worried about your children's mental health, reach out to your pediatrician or your local school. As I mentioned, there are a broad array of services and supports that are available either in school or through remote or telehealth. And related to adolescents, even prior to COVID, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey indicated high rates of adolescents experiencing anxiety and depression. And, you know, and this is a time that COVID is hitting where adolescents don't have as much access to their peers, and developmentally, they really should. So I would encourage parents to check in with your adolescents about how they're handling things. Ask them what they view as the worst and best things that have changed, and if they're struggling, ask them what they think might make things better. And certainly, we want to monitor screen time. We want to ensure that we have connection with our children and youth. And again, you know, Vermont just achieved the number one overall ranking for mental health access in the nation. A lot of that is because of our great health care coverage and special education services for children and youth. So I'd encourage parents to reach out and seek supports for children and youth if they're noticing that they're struggling.
Commissioner Squirrel, are you worried about the mental health, I mean, of all Vermonters, but specifically those populations, children and teenagers, after the pandemic? Because, you know, as we know, this can really affect child development and certainly can affect what they experience in the next few years if they've sort of endured what feels like a trauma.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And certainly when the data and research around previous public health crises, we see short-term and long-term consequences. In Vermont, we do benefit from having a very robust system of support for children and youth, but it's why we're, you know, proactively partnering with the Agency of Education right now to be thinking about how do we bolster our social and emotional supports for children and youth across the state as we go forward.
All right. Well, more to come on that. We're certainly all going to be watching and working on this issue of mental health and physical health and all of the associated issues with COVID-19 for many, many months to come. I appreciate both of you being on the show today. Sarah Squirrel is the Commissioner of the Vermont Department of Mental Health. Tracy Dolan is the Deputy Commissioner of the Vermont Department of Health. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you very much. You take care.